This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, good morning. You're listening to The Morning Run. I'm Wong Shaoning here with the one and only Khoo Soo Chuang, and we'll be here together with you until 10 a.m. It is now 6 a.m. in the morning, Thursday, 3rd of September. And wow, the week went really fast because we had that wonderful Monday off. I wish every week there was a Monday off.
I think we should legalize three-day weekends. I think we should institutionalize four-day weeks and three-day weekends, and productivity would spike. I'm serious. I think they considered that in Germany some years ago, didn't they?
Yeah, I think even New Zealand was contemplating it at one time. But, you know, unfortunately, does that then mean that on the 4 days you work, you just go nuts, like you overdo it, though?
No, because I think people will also work on weekends. That's the way we are nowadays. It's how we roll, you know?
If anything, right, I think the COVID-19 and the work-from-home phenomenon has made these boundaries almost invincible. I mean, they're like they don't exist anymore, right? Because you're literally coming downstairs from your bedroom to your living room or your study and just continuing working.
Do you know what, right? I just read this morning that in New York and New Jersey, people leaving the city conurbation for the great wild yonder has actually doubled in the last 4 months. They're getting out of Dodge. They're going to the big green spaces.
Yeah.
They want to get away from the city.
Yes,
and they're moving because the city is no longer as vibrant as it once was.
Yeah, I listened to this podcast on Bloomberg, and they did say that property prices in Greenwich, Winchester, all these suburbs outside of New York, even Brooklyn, has gone up. Except Manhattan.
Yeah.
And the question is, can Manhattan ever recover?
Well, you see, that's the thing, right? We will not know now. We will only know in 10 years' time. Not even in 10, 5 years' time.
And I'm curious whether that will be the case in Malaysia eventually or so. But in the meantime, what do we have, Chuang?
I talk about how television can sometimes be very misleading and how the issues that is covered in this particular story will be very relevant to all of us, not just in Malaysia, in the future.
And I'll be talking about food security and how you can do your little part. But do let us know what you think. You can weigh in on our conversations. Please WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. We will be back after this song, but don't go anywhere. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, and that was Ragged Wood by Fleet Foxes. Good morning. I'm Wong Shaoning here with Khoo Soo Chuang. And this is The Morning Run. First up, we have this rather interesting article from the Financial Times. And it's the title is China Cracks Down on Waste to Ensure Food Security. And it's actually got quite a cute picture in the article because there are three Chinese men sitting in what looks like a bathtub. bathtub or like a little, little pool surrounded by chilies and eating it. But aside from that cute picture, I think the point about this article is that over the weekend, China's state broadcaster actually departed from its regular programming to expose the hoaxes behind these individuals who are what they call champion eaters. So they are streaming themselves online, gobbling, and I really mean like gobbling down vast quantities of food. And I think this is copying the trend that we initially saw in Korea, the mukbang, where you see like individuals who are like normal shape, you know, slim in fact, eating like, let's say, imagine like, you know, buckets and buckets of fried chicken followed by like 20 burgers and packets of chips. And you're just watching them consume this huge quantity of food over a few hours. So apparently all this is a lie because these people are actually throwing away the food and not really consuming them in China. But I think there is a bigger point to all of this.
Yeah, that's because what used to be TV entertainment and these eating contests have now become really passé and in fact a little bit gauche because not enough food, and this huge wealth divide between the rich and the poor has really accentuated the fact that the poor people, a lot of it have been worsened by the COVID virus. They're trying to make do with very, very little, and it's very bad taste for television to be showing these eating shows when there's so many people going without. And it's a big issue because the amount of food that China wastes every year is something like 18 million tons, which is enough to feed 40 million people. 40 million people, right? It's the same population as Malaysia plus Singapore, plus I think maybe even Cambodia in total. Official, not including
undocumented
foreign workers, okay? So that's a lot of people. You can feed the entire population of three countries with the food that you waste. And this is a big thing because climate change will reduce the amount of land that can be used for arable purposes, and you'll see a lot of migration in the next century.
And not only the climate change, I think, it's also brought upon by humans, I guess. We have seen a lot of, chicken flu, things like this, swine fever. So even protein, sources of protein have come under attack. So, you know, the question is, how viable is our food security? And I think China also questions themselves that, because for them, by 2025, there will be as much as 130 million tons of shortfall of food. And this is a country where they still are into agriculture, albeit industrialization has really taken over for them. But yeah, you know, they are concerned how they're going to continue feeding their 1.3 billion population, which is, I'm sure, still growing, albeit at a slower pace. And we can actually bring this conversation back home to Malaysia, because even in Malaysia, we are and we do not have food security.
No, we don't. We've got to import our rice from Thailand. And this is a big thing. That's why sometimes when people ask me, oh, you know, what asset should I buy? They think I'm some kind of personal financial guru, which I'm not, obviously, right?
But I'm not.
Of course not. Malay Ali is, okay? But anyway, my response to them is, and they're like very, very surprised when I say this, because, you know, we talk about the share market all the time, right? And I said, look, if you have the means and you have the ability to, go and buy land. The reason you buy land is because on your own land, you can grow your own food. And that will be the biggest asset in the future.
Okay.
No question about it, right? And, you know, some of my Malay friends, they say, hey, you know, I tell them, hey, you got certain rights and privileges, right? Go and buy the land. And then they said to me, you know, I remember this conversation very, very, very clearly, right? He said to me, hey, bro, we spent half our lives trying to get out of the jungle. Now you're telling me to go back in. I said, well, you know, it's true, okay? Because
it's not easy. Agriculture,
right?
Is not easy.
Lo Bun Siew was the one who first, but, you know, he said, land, when you have land, you have your kingdom.
Well,
it's not shares of Apple, it's not shares of Maybank, it is your own land.
Do you think it's maybe now the future might be shares of agriculture or food production companies?
But you can't eat your shares.
Yeah,
you
that's
can't
true.
Eat your shares. You can't drink your
but
shares.
But not everybody has access to land, though. But the point is, I think we can do our little bits, right, when it comes to not wasting food. And I think COVID-19 really highlights that when, let's face it, shopping was a bit of a challenge. It was available. Food was available, but it wasn't available in the way we were used to, where we could just run to the shops, get whatever we wanted. And really, some things you couldn't find on the shelves that easily. And I remember being very careful about what I bought and trying not to waste. And actually, that's a really good thing that, you know, I hope I also continue, not just today, but, you know, on and on and on. Be mindful about everything that you own. I mean, that you eat and that you consume and that you buy.
Malaysians are guilty of a huge amount of food waste. Just look at Chinese New Year and you know, Raya, the buffets, right?
All those
incredible
festive,
right?
Seasons, right?
But I just want to make one point about what you said earlier about the COVID, right? There's a very strong school of thought which suggests that all these viruses which have been accelerating in recent years is because human beings have been consuming the animal population to such an extent that the viruses and the parasites and all these bacteria that used to live in the animal kingdom have now nowhere to go, and now they're moving to the human race. And this is something that was mentioned by this guy called Sir James Lovelock. He's a 101-year-old scientist from the UK who was very famous for his Gaia theory. Gaia is obviously Earth, right? And that's what he says. He says, we are having more pandemics because these bacteria have got nowhere else to go and they're coming to the human population.
So we need to respect Mother Nature. But let us know what you think about food security and food waste. WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. Up next, some messages. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, and that was Erase, Rewind by the Cardigans. And if you listen to the lyrics of the song, probably written when somebody was just, you know, just dumped their partner, I guess, trying to forget the past. Anyway, you're listening to The Morning Run with Xiaoning and Chuang. And next up is this article in the BBC, and the title is, it's about actually whether self-control, okay, makes you a bit of a psychopath. So the title is How Self-Control Can Actually Unleash Your Dark Side. So yeah, we know self-control is great, and with it usually comes people who are very careful, very disciplined, and have high moral behavior. But like with anything in life, when you take it a little bit too far, it's not necessarily good for you.
I don't know. Some people around me tend to be a little bit more in control than others.
Who are you talking about? Who are you talking about, John?
I didn't say anything, okay? there's some others who are at all not in control of themselves. I don't know who they are.
Who are?
So I guess the path to happiness lies somewhere in between, obviously, yes. Right? You can't be too rich, you can't be too poor, you can't be too fit, you can't be too fat, and you can't be too much in control, or you can't be too loose with your life. I think somewhere in between is a good way.
Yeah.
It's the middle path. It is the Zen journey. It is the difference between yin and yang.
Wow, how wise are you this morning, Chuang?
Not at all. Haven't got enough sleep, that's why. A bit zonked.
No, apparently what happens is that in this article, people who, in this article, what they did was there was an experiment. So 80 Parisians were given a chance to take part in this pilot of a game show. And, they could actually torture their fellow participants. But actually, in the end of the day, nobody was really doing it. What was really scary was that certain people took advantage or actually enjoyed torturing their fellow contestants. And when they examined the character of these people, they were wired in a particular way. And I have to say, when I read this article, I'm a little bit scared because say what you want, I'll confess right up now, I'm a little bit like this. I tend to be quite careful. I tend to be very disciplined and have some level of self-control. But like you say, how much is it? How much should a person have? Because on the flip side, if you are completely like ayo bochap, everything is okay, no problem, nothing gets done on either, right?
Yeah, and the test, the Parisians, 80 of them, electrocuting each other. Yeah. I just want to know how much cheese and wine they had first. I've been to the country. They don't do a lot of work, to be honest. They don't do a lot. They're constantly having coffee in cafes, and I never see them in the office working.
Okay? No, but I disagree because when I see them working, they work very hard. So people who do,
they're very concentrated in the work.
Yeah, so like I know they have this 40-hour week regulation, yeah. And then they have a mandated, I think if I'm not wrong, 2-month summer break.
It's mandated, by the way.
But when they work, they work.
When they work, they work. Lah. And then when they don't work, they don't work.
Maybe that's the better way.
Exactly, right? So, sometimes when I see people who break up their day into little chunks of like productivity, right? 35 minutes meeting, 15 minutes emails, 10 minutes workout, 5 minutes lunch. You know these kind of people are a bit like Mark Wahlberg, right?
Mm.
I'm not sure Mark Wahlberg is a happy guy. I'm serious.
Are you sure?
I'm not sure he's a happy guy.
I think everybody has to tune their own life. And come up with that perfect, well, it's not perfect, but
I think
the
Jack
formula.
Black is, I think Jack Black is really happy. You know Jack, the School of Rock, Jack Black?
Yeah, I've seen him. Like have these really cute YouTube videos of himself flopping into the swimming pool and then air guitar.
Jake Galifianakis is a happy guy, right? He's a happy guy, right? The Rock, despite his megawatt smile, is not a happy guy. I'm telling you.
Not just because they are very disciplined and maybe they work out at the gym and they're buff, unlike you, Chuang. Doesn't mean that they're not happy, right? How do you know that?
Yeah, well, I don't know. I'm just feeling the vibe from these guys over YouTube, you know?
I don't think that's necessarily a good gauge. But, I think this article also brings out a point, and maybe it's a good study in psychology. At what point does a model citizen, so all these people who have increasing level, who have high levels of self-control, discipline, moral behavior, when do they turn toxic? When do they become disturbing members of society or harmful members of society?
Okay, what you're just discussing can be best exemplified between, say, Singapore and Malaysia, right? Singapore is the example of control and rigidity and basically hard work, right?
Yeah, but look at how well they've done, their progress.
Yes, they have. And their monetary value and their net worth is amazing. So the scale is up there.
Their education level is high.
Et cetera. But why do they come to Malaysia to have a holiday? And why don't they stay in
Singapore?
Because
there's no place in Singapore.
Exactly, they're miserable.
It's a tiny little island. Where do you expect them to go on a staycation?
I think Malaysians are happier than Singaporeans.
I'm not so sure about that. I think it's very hard to judge whether one country is happier than another. But I think what's important is to find that balance within you. Have some self-control, but don't go too crazy with that control because otherwise you might turn into a meanie little dictator, not only in your life, but also in the office. So let us know what you think about our conversation earlier. WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. Up next, we have the news bulletin, and to take us there is Dancing in the Dark by the one and only Bruce Springsteen. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9. Good morning. I'm Shaoning here with Kusu Chuang. And of course, this is The Morning Run. And that was Torn by Natalie Imbruglia. I think Imbruglia? Imbruglia?
She not was to be confused with Imbroglio. Imbroglio is a different thing.
Yes, let's not go there, Chuang. If I'm not wrong, she was sadly a kind of like a one-hit wonder. And from
she wasn't. If you live in Australia, you would have been treated to all her top 40 hits. All one of them.
All one of them. And wasn't she a cast in Neighbours or Home and Away, one of these things, right?
Neighbours, yeah.
But anyway, we were taking a look at what's happening around the world. And this morning, we have some interesting, almost like James Bond, MI5.
James Bond.
CIA kind of stories out there.
We're going full Jason Bourne here. All right?
My favourite. Yeah. I love a good James Bond, Jason Bourne, all these kind of movies. You know, my secret ambition is to be James Bond, actually. But anyway, Germany has come out to say that there is proof that the Russian opposition politician Alexei Navalny was poisoned with a Novichok nerve agent, which was also used to poison a former Russian spy, Sergei Skripal, and his daughter in the UK in 2018, albeit they recovered later. So it's like it's something out of a book almost.
Yeah, and none other than German Chancellor Angela Merkel has alleged that someone was trying to silence Navalny and that there are now serious concerns that only the Russian government can answer. Navalny was an anti-corruption campaigner, so there's your motive right there. Like in a good Hitchcock novel. And he was also a vocal critic of Putin and his party.
That's another motive right there
to just off him, right? Rub him out. He has led nationwide protests against Russian government authorities and has been banned from standing against Putin in elections because of an embezzlement conviction, which he denies. And the plot gets thicker.
And thicker. So Navalny's supporters suspect that he drank a cup of poisoned tea at the airport while waiting for a flight to Moscow. Now, he was eventually transferred to Berlin, where he remains on a ventilator in intensive care. Now, guess what? This is not the first of the poisoning cases that has happened to, let's put them in inverted commas, right? Russian citizens, Russian dissidents, is that the right word?
dissidents, right? Residents.
Because Kremlin has always denied involvement. So in 2006, ex-Russian intelligence officer and Kremlin critic Alexander Litvinenko died after his tea was poisoned by radioactive material. Journalist and opposition activist Vladimir Karamurza was allegedly poisoned twice, by Russian security services and eventually suffered kidney failure in 2015 and going into a week-long coma in 2017. So they failed once, they did it again. And then Kremlin critic Verzilov accused Russia's intelligence services of poisoning him in 2018 after he fell ill after a court hearing, losing his sight and ability to speak.
So in Russia, they go the poison route. In other countries, go the C2 and helicopter route. Who knows, right? Anyway, ex-Russian spy Sergei Skripal and his daughter Yulia were also poisoned. So also using Novichok. Novichok is almost like a new sporting brand. It's like Nike, Adidas, Novichok, right?
But this can kill you.
But this one kills you. Well, they survived. The British woman later died in hospital. Oh, by the way, Navalny is still alive, albeit in a coma. So it does render you quite injured, I think.
But what does this say about the state of Russian politics and how secure does Putin is his reign? I mean, we know he's changed the constitution. And if I'm not wrong, he can be president until 2030, where he's not too old by Malaysian standards, 84 or 82 years old. But clearly,
have you seen him with his shirt off?
Yes, he loves doing that. He loves riding a horse without his shirt, shooting guns without a shirt.
But he's not a big guy, you know. Do you know what I mean? He's larger than life, but in life he's a bit smaller than life.
Allegedly ex-KGB agent.
Allegedly ex-KGB.
But meanwhile, we look at the US, you know, their besties of Trump and Putin, by the way. The US has imposed sanctions on several senior officers in the International Criminal Court, including Chief Prosecutor Fatou Bensouda. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo accused the court of illegitimate attempts to submit Americans to its jurisdiction. So the ICC is currently investigating whether U.S. forces committed war crimes in Afghanistan.
Yep, and of course the U.S. is not party to the ICC because it just doesn't like to dance to that music and has criticized the court since its founding in 2002 on grounds that it lacks due process and is incompatible with the U.S. Constitution. Trump, none other than him, issued the executive order in June allowing the US to block assets of ICC employees and stop them entering the good old US of A. The US State Department also restricted issuance of visas for ICC staff involved in efforts to investigate US personnel.
Well, looks like the Americans, you know, they have this view that their judiciary system is probably the best and they don't need anyone to keep a check on what's going on there. But meanwhile, we look closer to home in Thailand. Analysts say that public backlash, which forced Thailand to delay plans to procure two more submarines from China, stem from the lack of clarity on why the Navy needed this hardware, as well as the validity of the deal signed 3 years ago. But we do know Thailand is facing an economic crisis. No tourism, GDP is all-time low. And I think those protests are still going on, right?
Do you remember the time Malaysia bought some submarines as well?
Yes.
And then they didn't submerge.
They couldn't sink.
The submarines, they couldn't. And then we bought this like this radar equipment, right? Which then got the wrong coordinates. Do you remember that one?
Yes.
Yeah.
And then looks like we're not the only country that buys faulty equipment.
Yeah.
But let us know what you think about any of these stories or anything that we've discussed this morning. WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. Up next, we'll take a look at the front pages of our daily newspapers and online portals. We'll be back after these messages. Don't go away. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, I'm Wong Xiaoning with Khoo Soo Chuang, and this is The Morning Run, and that was Rock and Roll is King by Electric Light Orchestra.
It is.
Yeah, it is. And now we're going to be taking a look at the newspapers this morning. But before that, we have some social media comments, right, Chuang? What do we have?
Yes, we have. And it's come from Ro, 21 minutes past 6, talking about our food wastage story that was brought to us by from China. Well, Ro, I think, very rightly points out that food wastage ought to be a legal crime because it's already a moral one, let alone gorging for entertainment. It's gross and it's a reflection of human beings' all-time low. I really couldn't agree with him more. It's just gosh, it's just bad. Bad taste.
It's bad reflection of us. And then KY Ho also chimed in, but this is in regards to what we were saying about US and the international courts. So he says it's hypocritical of the US to sanction the ICC. It is using the excuse of protecting its citizens to do as it pleases outside its jurisdiction, but then wants other countries to toe its line. Well said, KY Ho. But looking at the newspapers, actually, I've got the Malaysia Kini in front of me. Oh, well, the website anyway. And it's got an interesting article saying government owes secretive Pembina and PFI firm, now get this, $29.68 billion. Okay. So the debt level of a little known finance ministry owned company was a whopping $29.68 billion as at June 30th. And this was revealed in a parliamentary written reply by the Finance Ministry to Bangi MP Ong Kian Ming on March 26. Kian Ming has written numerous times about this company, asking if the company intends to fund development projects through this company and how much were the company's current debts. And now we know.
Okay, moving from debts to B20. B20 is obviously the biodiesel formulation that the palm oil planters want to get rid of, well, to use some of the supply uptake. Apparently, according to the Malaysian Reserve, hauliers are shying away from B20 because there's going to be a high modification cost for each truck. So each truck that you want to try and modify to accommodate B20 biodiesel is going to cost 3,000 ringgit. And at a time when balance sheets and P&Ls are constricted, 3,000 ringgit is a lot of money. On Star, the front page, it's a wordplay on the famous Bob Dylan song, Knocking on Heaven's Door. This one reads, At Debt's Door. Now, apparently, Credit Counseling and Debt Management Agency, AKPK, has recorded over 1,000 walk-in inquiries. Over 1,000 walk-in inquiries on a daily basis.
Daily.
Daily basis, okay? Help asking for financial advice. So read into that what you will.
I really wonder what's going to happen on the 1st of August then.
October.
Of October.
Yeah,
right.
The bankers are wringing their hands in a bit of despair. Second page of the Star. Apparently, there's been a survey from the Manika Centre, Ben Sufian's outfit, that found that 7 out of 10 Malaysians are happy with the Prime Minister's performance, but at the same time, equally, 6 out of 10... but their biggest worry is about life in general, because obviously butter, bread and butter issues are very much uppermost in their minds.
Yeah, that's the actually main story in the Singapore Straits Times also by Sharon Teo, their Malaysian bureau chief. The point about this Merdeka Centre survey was that the last time the Premier scored higher was within the first 100 days of the Mahathir administration amid the euphoria of Pakatan Harapan's shock 2018 win. Now, some 93% also said they were satisfied with the government's performance in managing the COVID-19 pandemic, 68% for helping the needy, and 61% for running the economy. So looks like Tan Sri Muhyiddin isn't doing too badly in this polls.
Polls are polls and life is life. Page 11 of The Nation in The Star, there's been a Malaysian, apparently, a certain university Malaya's Dr. Chan Yok Fan, she's been developing a vaccine that could combat viruses that causes HFM, right? Hand, foot and mouth disease, as well as brain infections in children. So she's been lauded and awarded the coveted ASEAN-US Science Prize for Women 2020 for her research in this multivalent vaccine.
Yeah, yep. And another story in the Malay Mail is about our education and our rankings on the Times Higher Education Ladder. So Malaysian universities stagnant on this ladder as more regional peers make the cut. So the top three universities remain unchanged from last year, even as two regional competitors made this list. So for 2021, University Malaya is in the 301 to 350 band, followed by University Tunku Abdul Rahman in the 501 to 600 band and UKM in the 601 to 800 band. The point is, you know, why aren't our Malaysian education universities kind of inching up? And I think in the top 20, if I'm not wrong, China, of course, is there. And NUS is now in the 25th space with Nanyang Technological University at 47th place.
Because the politicians are there, simple as that. Page one of the Edge CEO brief pointing out that Malaysia Airports has slashed rentals in their airport outlets by as much as 30%. So that's equivalent to a total annual savings for $45 million for the participating tenants. And of course, as we know, AirAsia is the airport's biggest tenant at KLIA too.
Well, I guess they have to do this right, because even though flights have started, the level of flights is much, much lower than it used to be. So you probably have to give them some sort of subsidy. Otherwise, really, these shops cannot continue. But that's all from the papers this morning. Coming up next is the 7 a.m. news bulletin, followed by more business news and analysis, where we'll be speaking to Tony Nash, CEO of Complete Intelligence. But first, here's some messages. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.